likes to play fantasy football.
This is so great, you guys, being in the league, hanging out with you guys at the bar. It's like a date night.
Yeah.
Yeah?
No, this is not like a date night, and this is not the way two people who go head-to-head should be acting.
Would you rather... Oh, get over here. You were head-to-head this week. I'm going to take you down.
Yeah, guys, we're just talking about a little friendly competition here.
There's no friendliness. There's no love in the league.
That's a clip from the TV show, The League, an FX show about a fantasy football league. And in this half hour, I'm trying to figure out what is the appeal of fantasy football. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, September 14th. Some people find fantasy football a ton of fun. Others say it is irritating. Still others say it corrupts the game. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Paul Charchian, president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association and founder of Fanball and LeagueSafe.
Hi.
Did I get that right? What is that?
Well, those are two different companies in the fantasy space. My first company was Fanball, and have since sold that and started a new one called LeagueSafe, which
is a
PayPal alternative for fantasy leagues.
I get it. Well, Paul, what is fantasy football?
Well, for people that aren't familiar with the game at all, and at this point it's hard to find people that aren't familiar. We think virtually everybody either plays or has a direct, you know, one person distance away from somebody who plays. But the way that it works is in the preseason before the games start, usually in the month of August, friends get together, they take turns distributing players, and then through the course of the season they play head-to-head matchups with my players against Joy's players, hoping that my players that week will outscore yours. And if they do, I get the win and you get the loss, or vice versa.
And what do you win?
Well, in 40% of the leagues, nothing. There's nothing on the line, and there's no money or any prizing involved whatsoever. For the other leagues, the amount of money involved is generally very small, somewhere on average around a total of $5 a week. And then at the end of the season, the winner ends up getting, you know, all or some portion of the accumulated pot throughout the year. So, you know, but money has not ever been a key motivation for fantasy play because the money's just not enough, and it's never been considered gambling. In fact, gamblers don't bother with fantasy because there's just not enough money in it.
So what is the appeal?
The appeal is largely social, Joy. It's the league that you started while you were in your frat, and now everybody's gone their own way, and you got, you know, a couple of guys in Texas and California, and some stayed in state and some didn't, and some are on the other side of town, but you all stayed together through your fantasy league. We have a saying in the fantasy industry that fantasy football was the original social network before there was the term social network, an online social network, because everyone was playing online, and that's how we kept in touch, and we get together for our draft, and we talk smack by email, and it's become part of our social network.
Yeah, is this mainly a bunch of guys, or are a lot of women joining in these leagues?
It's 80% male, it's 20% female. And the motivations, though, for playing, according to our research, are a little bit different between men and women.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is largely built around competitiveness. Men are playing with a large motivation. I'm generalizing here. Are playing with a larger motivation to win and to get the championship at the end and hoist the trophy. Women are playing because they like being part of the group and they like being part of the discussion and being around the water cooler. And in a lot of cases, they like being one of the guys. Yeah. They like being the one or two women in the league when all the rest of the guys are playing.
Well, how did you first get into it?
I started with a draft in my 7th grade cafeteria, and not even knowing what it was, and we just drafted guys off the top of our heads. I mean, now they have cheat sheets that are built to help you draft that are meticulously oriented to just your very scoring system. One of the great things about fantasy football, Joy, nobody tells us how to play. So you and I and Amanda could start a league with 7 other people, and I'm sure Amanda and Joy are very interested in that.
She just said never.
And we could decide touchdowns are worth this many points, and we're going to reward yardage. And if you get a really long touchdown, we're going to double those points, and you can decide however we want to play. And that's part of the beauty of fantasy football. Nobody tells you how you have to play.
Well, as we just hinted, Amanda Magnus, my producer director, not a fan of fantasy football. Rob Ferret, another producer, did play fantasy football for the longest time, but I think he said he just he just stopped playing, I think, even this year. So I don't know if he's trying to withdraw or what.
Well, you know, on that note, we've done some research on why people quit playing and what sort of motivations are there. And if people are interested in playing, enjoy. 80% of today's fantasy sports players have no intention of quitting for a decade, and half of those, 40% of the people playing right now, plan to play fantasy sports until they die. Well, so, Amanda, you might, it's going to be tough, but you know, your fantasy-loving friends aren't going to go anywhere.
All right, well, here's another example of one of our producers, though. Chris Molina, I'm naming names, said he thinks, or he wonders, whether fantasy football corrupts the game in that people have split loyalty and you're not really, you know, cheering for the Packers. You're cheering for that player that you have on your fantasy football league that plays for the Bears, for example.
Yes, God forbid.
Yeah.
What we found, you know, what we found is that people just have dual allegiances. In fact, fantasy players they buy more season tickets and they consume more football across, including their preferred team. So does it change the way you watch the game? Absolutely 100% changes it. Does it degrade your love of the Packers? No, it really doesn't at all. You know, it puts a little bit of salve on a wound when the Packers lose and your guy scored three times. But even better if the Packers win and your guy scored three times against the Packers.
What if the Packers lose and your guy, you know, was a big part of that and you're kind of, you know, you're cheering that?
Yeah, well, you know, you don't cheer too loudly. But most people still ultimately want the Packers to win. But they want to see their guys do well against the Packers if it's not too much of an inconvenience.
All right. Well, I was watching the Packers 49ers game on Sunday with my 20-something niece and nephew and my niece and nephew's boyfriend and girlfriend. Mm. They all four have, I guess, joined a league together. I mean, I'm familiar with this, but so you kind of get a group of people and you become your own league. Is that what the deal is?
Yeah. Typically, leagues are 10 to 10 or 12 people together, and it can be people. You know, or you can go on the internet and go to NFL.com or ESPN or Yahoo or Fox or many other sites, and you can just find leagues that are looking for people and starting up with strangers. So if you don't know 10 people who want to play, you can find them easily on the internet.
But they were, and I'm not going to say they were irritating me, but they were irritating me. No, they were watching. We're all watching that game together, and they're on their they're on their cell phones or their smartphones, looking to see what the other other teams were doing and you know, whooping it up when one of their team, you know, members did something good. And it was like, well, it kind of ruined the social aspect of the game we were watching.
Well, yes and no. You know, because for you, probably, and it might be annoying that we are what we call a second screen users, meaning, you know, we watch the game that everybody else is watching, but then we've got the results of what's happening in our fantasy games on another screen. It might be a laptop, or it might be an iPad, or it might be our phone, so that we can track how all the other players are going, because at any given time, you know, at kickoff at noon, there's typically 9 other games going. We can't very easily watch the other 9, so it's important. We want to know how our guys are doing, so we need another screen for that. And how much people sort of put that in your face is sort of up to them and their own personal bad graces as guests.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Paul Kartchian, who is president of Fantasy Sports Trade Association and founder of Fanball and League Safe. We're talking about the appeal of fantasy football. And he's only with us for another few minutes. So if you'd like to join in with a question or a comment for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tell us about your league and why you play. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will also be welcoming in another guest who is the founder of a fantasy football website here in Wisconsin. Matthew on Facebook says, Joy, I may fall into an extreme minority. I am in 2 different fantasy leagues, primarily because I enjoy the community aspects of it, i.e. the witty smack talk between my buddies. Meanwhile, I rarely watch or follow the actual sport. I grow increasingly uncomfortable with the violence of football and the gluttony of its culture. Yet here I go again, pouring through the stats, trying to pick up another running back.
Yeah. Well, that takes all the fun out of it. Not watching the game, he does go to great lengths to illustrate our point that the main reason people play is social.
Yeah. All right. Let me take John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, my trick is that I always draft a Packer in my draft so that I can root for him on Packer game days, and never draft a Bear.
So how's your Packer doing, John? Who is it?
Well, Greg Jennings is hurt, so I picked up Cobb as his backup, and he only got me four yesterday.
I like the fact that John already knows how many points Randall Cobb got him last night. That's a very good sign. And, you know, but the catches, of course, you know, you could draft a lot of Packers, you can root for them, but then if they have a bad year, you lose twice. Not only do you lose psychologically from the Packers being not as good as you'd want, but then your fantasy team goes down the drain, too.
So, Paul, you expect fantasy football is going to be with us for a long time, and that's a good thing.
We've been growing at roughly a 2 million player per year clip now for over 10 years. We're up to 36 million players aged 12 and up in the U.S. and Canada, and the fastest growing segment for us is under 18, as we're seeing increasing numbers of parents want to play with their kids, and they create family leagues with kids and nieces and nephews and uncles. And so if people aren't going to stop playing, 40% of people aren't playing until they die, then, you know, these kids that are getting in now are going to be playing a very long time.
Very fun. Do you have a Packer on your team?
I'm in 9 leagues. I've got everybody from every team, one way or another.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy. Bye-bye.
Paul Charchian is president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association and founder of Fanball and League Safe, talking with us about the appeal of fantasy football. Do you play fantasy football, or does it drive you a little bit batty? Let us know whether you're a fan or a foe of fantasy football. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll welcome in another fan of fantasy football, someone who runs a fantasy football website in Wisconsin, in just a few minutes. We can expect sunny, mild conditions today in Wisconsin, a high temperature around 70 degrees. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7:30, we're going to turn our attention to the NFL referee lockout and the effect that replacement refs are having on the game. That's coming up after 7:30. Right now, we continue our exploration of fantasy football and wondering what's the appeal and wondering if you play fantasy football or if you'd rather not. Thank you. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Now we welcome in Jeff Christensen of Oconomowoc, founder of FFToolbox.com, a fantasy football website. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
What exactly do you have on your fantasy football website?
Well, we have basically like an online newspaper. So it's advice columns on what to do with your fantasy team, and we rank all the players each week and with the expectation of how many points we project for them to score each week.
Yeah, so this is something that anybody can just check out if they're a part of a fantasy football league?
Yep, it's a free website. You don't have to have a registration or anything. You can just hop on. We actually get a lot of people to come, you know, middle of the day. Maybe they're at work, maybe they're at home, but they're it's becoming a phenomenon. And like I heard Paul talking, it's the largest hobby. He has all the stats, but we have all sorts of people, you know, men, women, office people, blue-collar folks. Everybody's playing fantasy football.
Well, what got you into fantasy football?
Well, I actually started the website 15 years ago. It was for my personal league with my brother and our friends in high school. And in 1997, I started the website. I was in college, and it was my own personal rankings. And then I started getting people emailing me asking when I'm going to update it. And then shortly after that, I got people asking, can I write an article that you would post? And it's just blown up from there.
Well, so this turned into your livelihood?
It is. The last 5 years, I've been doing it full-time. I work out of my home in Oconomowoc.
Well, you must. So you're certainly a fan of fantasy football. What do you think the appeal is?
I think a lot of it has to do with how easy it is. Now, granted, some people take it and make it complicated and a real challenge and with their friends and coworkers. But at its most basic level, it's following players in the NFL, making your own Pro Bowl team, and cheering them on each week. There's a lot of free services out there so that it doesn't cost anything to play. And then, like, we have free information, so it's real easy to learn about it and to play.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Jeff Christensen, who is the founder of a fantasy football website in Oconomowoc. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a comment about fantasy football, whether you love it or not so much. 1-800-642-1234. Or if you have a question about how this works or the appeal of it, you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Michael in Madison is with us now. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to give my perspective. I had played fantasy football for more than 10 years, and this is the first year I'm not.
How come you're not?
Well, I had been the commissioner of the league I was in, and just with children and things like that, I was starting to not have the time to devote as much time to it. So I passed it on to another member in the league. He changed a bunch of things around, and it just didn't interest me to be playing that way. So I decided not to do it this year. And I just wanted to say that it's very liberating. I've rediscovered why I loved football before. It's really changed the way back. I didn't realize that I had watched football differently for the past 10 years, and now this year it's been very liberating, and I'm enjoying it.
You like it better the old-fashioned way?
I do now, yes.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Jeff?
I hear what he's saying. I'm a big Packer fan, growing up in Wisconsin. I try to turn off, my cell phone and put away my laptop during the Packer game, but it's you do tend to watch it differently. You end up watching the ticker at the bottom of the game where they're showing the stats for the other games and who's scoring. So I hear what he's saying.
So what happened? Do you have a Chicago Bear on your fantasy league and you had to have split loyalties last night, Jeff?
Actually, I don't have a Bear. Last week I had a couple 49ers, which was difficult. But I typically try to keep my – I heard Paul had 9 leagues. I try to stick around 2 or 3. I've got enough going on with the website. But I tend to actually avoid Packers, and certainly I try to avoid Bears.
Oh,
I
see.
What I try to I worry too much when I'm drafting that I'm drafting a Packer too high because I like the Packers and I sometimes end up with less Packers than some of my opponents.
So last night I assume you followed the game somehow. Did you just follow the game or were you wondering about your other players?
Well, this was pretty easy because it was the Thursday game and there was only one game going on.
Oh yeah, that's right.
On Sundays, when there's 4, 5, 6 other games going on, I do tend to peek down at the ticker at the bottom. But I'm a Packer fan first, and you'll find this with most fantasy folks that if they're in Pittsburgh or maybe they're they've moved, but if they're a Steeler fan, the Steelers come first, and then their fantasy team. If they're a Cowboys fan, the Cowboys come first. From the people I've talked to over the years, they're a fan first and then a fantasy player.
So you don't think that it hurts the game in any way?
I don't think that it hurts the game. I think if anything, people learn more about other teams, about players on other teams, and it gives you a better knowledge of the whole NFL and what's going on. I've talked to people that now know all the offensive linemen on their running backs team because the offensive lineman is an important piece of the rushing game.
John and Kimberly writes, I watch football with my son every Sunday. We used to have a good time cheering each of our favorite teams. Now all he does is grumble about what individual players are doing or not doing. I wish fantasy football would go away. So a dad's upset because his son's playing fantasy football and not watching the game with him.
Yeah, like the previous caller was saying, it does change how you watch the game. It does add an additional challenge. I advise people, you know, put your favorite team first, and then worry about your fantasy team. And the other thing, of course, is that you set your fantasy lineup before all the games start. So I try to set it and then just, you know, whatever happens, happens. I already made those decisions. Now let's just watch football.
Greg on Facebook says, I have two fantasy football teams. One is a money league and one is just for fun. I have to admit that I have been kind of myopic about my liking the Packers, and I wanted to follow the other teams in the NFL. I found it to be very fun. Last year I won my money league, which is probably why I enjoy it so much. So I guess there can be a payoff.
Absolutely. There's, you know, small stakes. You know, maybe everybody kicks in $10 and the winner walks away with, you know, $100 or something like that. All the way up to, there's something, if you believe it, called high stakes fantasy football. And they draft in Las Vegas, and there's a really big payout.
Yeah. And we have just 30 seconds to go. Are you are your teams doing okay?
My teams are doing okay. Last night wasn't particularly good for one of my teams. I had Greg Jennings on the bench because he was injured.
Oh, yeah.
And I started JerMichael Finley, who had a couple drops, but he did get me one catch.
Well, good luck to you. Thanks very much, Jeff Christensen of Oconomowoc. This is the Ideas Network. The Packers beat the Bears last night, 23-10, and we will celebrate that a bit, but we will talk more about the performance of the NFL replacement refs and how the referee lockout is affecting the game. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Friday, September 14th. There has been a lot of grumbling about how the replacement refs are blowing calls, like giving teams an extra timeout.
Seattle did have a timeout to use. Their third timeout was a result of an incomplete pass followed by an injury. The clock was not running. They were not charged with that timeout. This is their third and final timeout.
The referee later acknowledged his mistake. We will talk about the contract dispute and the lockout and how the replacement refs are doing, and we'll welcome your calls, maybe your gripes, maybe your defense of the replacement refs. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, football fans, do you think the backup refs are hurting the game? Our guest is Jason Keidel, sports writer for WFAN CBS in New York City. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us again.
My pleasure.
What do you think, first of all, did the Packers do okay last night?
They did fine. You know, it was fascinating. We as fans and members of the media try to glean too much from the first game. You know, there's a confluence of circumstances that go into an opening weekend. Health, timing, desire, schedule, climate, all these things that go into one game. And we try to use week one as a microcosm for the entire season, and it's just silliness. But that's sort of the nature of the beast. And if you watched every snap of the Packers 49ers game, as I did, I understand why Packers fans were deeply troubled. But I picked the Packers officially in my column to go to the Super Bowl, and basically, that's because the NFL is a quarterback-dependent league, and you have the best quarterback not only on Earth, but probably in the universe. And you know, they were dominated by San Francisco. There's no question about that, but it was just one game. And as the Packers proved last night, In the NFL, you can turn things around rather quickly, particularly when you went 15-1 last year. People seem to forget that. The Packers will be fine.
Yeah, well, we're all with you on the quality of our quarterback, and I love your Super Bowl prediction. We were all concerned, yes, when we watched the 49ers game. We thought the Packers weren't playing that great, but we also thought the refs weren't playing that great either. It seemed like they blew call after call after call, or was it just my imagination?
No, it wasn't your imagination, and the face of your franchise, Aaron Rodgers, was very vocal in his displeasure over the refereeing. But what Mr. Rodgers forgot to mention was the Packers were the beneficiary of a blown call that got them a touchdown on Mr. Cobb's punt return. There was a block in the back. The referees called the wrong block in the back, and they reversed the call. They missed the actual clipping, which the replay showed was pronounced and very illegal. The refs missed it, and the Packers scored. The Packers were certainly the victim of some bad calls, but they lost the game because they were dominated by a dominant San Francisco defense, and the Packers were just off. That happens. And people, you know, need to realize that the 49ers are one heck of a football team. They were one fumbled punt from going to the Super Bowl last year, so it's not like they lost to a bunch of scrubs. And they made Jay Cutler look pretty bad last night, and Clay Matthews is a beast of a linebacker. And you know, the Packers are still on course to win 12 or 13 games.
Yeah, so how did the replacement refs do last night?
I am not one of those people who likes to airbrush the situation. I think the difference in performance between the replacement refs and the true refs who are now sitting on the sideline, if you will, is pronounced. They're doing a terrible job. On the first game of the season, Giants versus the Cowboys, which was played 5 minutes from where I live, MetLife Stadium, they blew a call in the end zone. Wide receiver Victor Cruz was held in the end zone, and he wasn't able to catch a pass that Eli Manning threw. If you just played a clip from the Seahawks game, the Seahawks were given a fourth timeout, which never happens. maybe once every 10 years the real refs will do that, but that's not something that referees do. You have the Oakland Raiders were robbed of an extra play at the end of their game. They were not given a chance to tie a game against the Chargers. These are some significant mistakes they're making. There are plays on the line of scrimmage, Joy, for fans who, or for your audience who's not as dialed into football as most of us. There's a lot of kicking and screaming and grunting and holding at the line of scrimmage. And a person could argue you could always call holding on the offensive line. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is something profound, like giving a team an extra timeout, missing a block in the back that everyone saw but the referees. Of course, the mistakes are italicized because they are scabs, for lack of a better term. But there is a pronounced difference between the two.
Yeah, well, what is, you know, where did these replacement refs come from? They just don't know what's going on, or they just haven't done any NFL games before?
The latter. Mm-hmm. They haven't done any NFL games. Most of them are college refs or umpires, whatever officials you'd like to call them. Some are even from the high school ranks. All of them have experience working football games, but even for players, gifted players like Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III, who are the first two picks in the NFL draft this year, even they've remarked about the difference in the speed of the football game. So if it's tougher for them to adjust, and these are world-class athletes, you can imagine how tough it is for the referees to make this kind of adjustment. It's an entirely different game, and some of these guys are chemistry teachers, some of these guys are lawyers, some of these guys, all of these refs have real quote-unquote jobs, if you will, and to make the jump from high school or to college to the NFL is a marked difference, and obviously there's going to be a dip in performance, but I think Roger Goodell and the NFL is sugarcoating it because they don't want to give the old referees a pension.
Yeah, tell us, why are the old referees locked out?
Well, it depends on who you ask. The referees, the main point, the most vital negotiating problem between the two is a pension. The NFL argues that referees who are technically part-time employees make six figures, both true, do not deserve a pension. The NFL wants them to do something, a more defined contributions program like a 401k. The referees want to keep their pension. The NFL is saying it's not fair that people who work 6 months a year get a pension. And also, Goodell rightly points out that these guys do make six figures to work 6 months, and then they can do whatever they want with the rest of their year. So you have valid points on both sides. of course, the people on the referee side will say the NFL is a money-minting machine, which is true. They made over $9 billion in revenue last year, and people predict by 2016 they'll be making $12 billion a year. I mean, that's money we can't even comprehend. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are worth $2.1 billion. So certainly the NFL has the money to spare, but I think it's a principle. They don't want to set a dangerous precedent, and then anyone who works part-time for the NFL is going to start begging for a pension.
Mm-hmm. So what's your prediction? Is this lockout going to last all season, or is there any hope that it will resolve itself soon?
Well, I'm certainly hoping that it will. There is a considerable chasm, not only in the performance between the old and the new referees, but also at the negotiating table. It doesn't seem like either side is willing to budge at this moment. And if I'm the referee and I make, for example, one referee is a judge, one is an attorney. If I'm making six figures doing what I was trained to do, that is a barrister or a judge or a policeman or whatever, and the other 6 months I'm making six figures to referee NFL games, I'm inclined to give in, but again, I'm not in their position. To answer your question more directly, I don't think, unless a game, a nationally televised game, is clearly blown by one of the replacement refs, which will certainly hasten the negotiations from the ownership point of view, I don't see anything changing for months.
We are talking with Jason Keidel, who is a sports writer for WFAN. We are talking about the NFL referee lockout and what this means for football. What do you think about how these backup refs are performing during the game so far this season? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think about the contract dispute between the NFL owners and the referees? Referees want a pension. The NFL owners are saying, no, you only work 6 months a year and you make six figures already. What do you think about that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We can expect sunny and mild conditions today with a high temperature around 70 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny and mild with highs in the mid to upper 70s and another sunny warm day on Sunday with a high of about 80 degrees. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, September 14th. Coming up after 8, it's the Week in Review. We'll have two guests from different political viewpoints talking with you about these top news stories of the week. You can also call in and talk about what you think is the most significant news story of the week this afternoon after 4 o'clock. It's another edition of Your Views on the News during At Issue with Ben Marins after 4. Right now, we're talking about the NFL referee lockout and the replacement refs and what this all means for football. And we wonder if you think the backup refs are hurting the game, or, well, maybe you think they're helping the game. We wouldn't have games without them, would we? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Kevin in Milwaukee is with us first. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy and Jason. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have 2 points. Number one, the NFL is presenting their games. They have a right to present a fully polished game where they have fully trained referees. I realize that they would be losing ground if they gave in to the referees, but it's their responsibility to the fans to present a well-refereed game, so I think it's their responsibility. And my second point would be that these referees are being thrust into a much more higher tense situation where they're on live television. They haven't been in a situation before, and they might not know the players that they need to watch or what to expect as much, even though I realize that they aren't doing as good of a job as the other referees. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin. He says the NFL really has the obligation to have a fully trained referee refereeing these games, Jason.
Kevin, he makes some fantastic points, Joe. He makes several good points, and both sides are very convincing with their arguments. Obviously, all of them are lawyers. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, is an attorney. And you have to understand something about Commissioner Goodell. First of all, he's very well-spoken. He's very clever. There's a reason he's an NFL commissioner. But he's also a shill, for lack of a better term. He's basically a front man for the owners. He was hired by the owners. He works for the owners. He has no legal or moral interest necessarily in the players. That's not to say he wants any harm upon the players, but his obligation, his bread is buttered by the owners. So he is, for instance, he told U.S. News and World Report that the pension is clearly an issue, and he said only about 10% of the country has the type of pension program that the referees currently have. And then he pointed out that he himself, the commissioner of the NFL, doesn't have that. Well, that sounds very compelling until you consider the fact that he makes $10 million a year. So I don't think Mr. Goodell's pension program is really an issue in his household. So you really have to grind through the facts to see who's telling the truth. Everyone's heard the saying, you know, there's my side, there's your side, then there's the truth. Goodell makes some valid points, but he also exaggerates for effect, which is obviously his job. But for a league that generates upwards of $10 billion a year, paying a pension to the referee, and there's also a player safety issue, Joy, which is what the caller just alluded to. You know, the worse the refereeing is, the greater risk you put the players in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so it sounds like you don't think the refs are asking for too much and that the NFL might be stingy at this.
Well, it's interesting. I do think, in theory, a person who works 6 months a year is not necessarily entitled to the pension. Well, what I'm worried about is the hastiness with which this was handled. In other words, why not extend the deal, at least through the season, and then either fire these referees, for lack of a better term, or extend them at the end of the year. In other words, this was done so hastily, I think everybody's put in jeopardy. You know, the contract between the Referee Association and the NFL expired May 31. You know, why are we still in September not sure about what all the issues are? I think after the Super Bowl, which is the first week of February, you have 6 or 7 months to either bring these guys back on board or get rid of them and start a whole new crew and train them. I think it's obvious to everybody that the referees are either out of shape or not focused or adjusted to the speed of the new game. And everyone is suffering because of that, Joy.
Peter in Madison is with us now. Hello, Peter.
Hi there. I did some very quick Google searching on what the salaries actually are, and there seems to be a consistency, $25,000 to $70,000 per NFL referee. Now, the umpires, there's about the same quantity in a national baseball game, and they make around $121,000 to $141,000. So basically at least a magnitude of two. And so, you know, the central issue here is the one thing about the injury possibility. How many American baseball players go into dementia into their 50s and 60s? The game itself is dramatically brutal to the players who play it, and they're on constant need for pain medications and so forth, whereas baseball, it seems more like more of a civil sport in many ways, yeah. And NFL seems like a reflection of Ayn Rand.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit, though, about the lockout and the effect on football, the game of football?
Well, that is the effect on football. I mean, the basic idea is that when you have people that are so self-centered, they are so self-centered they can't even see that they're throwing a boomerang out and hurting themselves. Because the effect is that people are beginning to see that this game is becoming a joke. I mean, I've seen so many calls that were just unbelievable. And I'm not a referee, but I've watched the game for a number of decades. And if you have a referee, they're there for a function. And you think about the value of a franchise. Your guest just said it's into the billions of dollars. That's 1,000 million times two for just one football franchise. And if you have, you know, some broken plays that change a multi-billion-dollar franchise, think of any other profession for which you, as a line worker, can change the outcome of a multi-billion-dollar industry. That is called the CEO. Mm-hmm. You know, in any other sort of profession.
What do you think, Jason?
Perhaps I'm reaching a level of honesty that borders on stupidity, but I'm not sure he made a point. Can you distill one for me? I don't know what he's saying. Is he pro-referee? Is he anti-referee? I understand basically he's saying that the referee can change the outcome of a game, which seems self-evident, but I'm not sure what else he was getting at.
Yeah, well, because there are so many other callers, I'm going to move on to some others. Okay. Thank you, Peter. Randy in Ripon is with us. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. I think the last caller kind of covered what I was saying.
What was he saying?
Yeah, well, please tell us.
The way I understood it, it was the refs are risking their lives, and they should be duly compensated. I mean,
I didn't
take some pretty big hits. And when you stand next to a pro player, and I'm just an average 5'8 guy, and I would be mutilated out there. And I think you're inviting just profound corruption by cutting back. And as far as, like, the Green Bay 49ers game, there were so many blatant missed calls. I was just astounded, and they changed the outcome of the game.
So you side with the refs because they are in a dangerous profession. Well, they deserve
well, their... Do you think about it? I mean, they could spend the rest of their lives in a wheelchair, and I mean, you know, these guys are taking a huge risk.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I know that our other caller said this. He was disgusted with self-centered behavior, maybe on all sides. I'm not sure, but so anyway, what about that, Jason? That the ref is putting his or her life at risk.
I don't really buy that. There isn't enough history to suggest that referees are severely injured on a weekly, monthly, or even yearly basis. Certainly they are subjected to being hit hard by rather large men traveling at fast speeds. But the referees are either properly trained, nimble, or focused on the task at hand. And they're generally in the right position at the right time to make the call. We occasionally see a ref getting knocked off the field or backed into by another player who doesn't see him. But generally, refs are pretty safe out there. It's obviously an inherently violent sport. But the referees should be properly compensated, not because they are at risk physically, but because they do play such an important role in the football game. And I think Commissioner Goodell is trying to airbrush that fact.
And we go now to Mark in Appleton. Hello, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for getting me on here today. Mm-hmm. I certainly do not agree with the refs not coming back and doing their job for a couple of reasons. One is I would disagree with a few of the callers. You know, these games are going along. There's more replay that you're going to see, which I'm fine as a fan. I've been watching football for a couple decades myself. But people in America that are watching these games, the average person doesn't make a six-figure at home. And then to see the greed where they don't want to come to work because they want more is not going to work for the game. I think that the average fan is going to sit back and say, you know what? These NFL refs got there by doing games, and that's exactly what's happening. I watched the game last night with the Packers. I was fine with how the game went. Okay, the players play the game for a reason. The refs are making six figures for 6 months. That's ridiculous in itself. Now, people are going to say, well, these owners are making all this money, this and that. They're doing all the risk. When you look at these stadiums and the money that goes into these stadiums, it is a risk. And the fans doing it, you know, want the game to play. It's going to play throughout the year. And if they don't want to come back and make six figures part-time, I think these other refs are going to come in and do a good job. And it's going to take time for them to catch up to the game, but it will happen.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Well, we have just a minute to go, Jason. Tell us what you think is going to happen.
Well, I find this fascinating, Joy. I don't know if you picked up on this, but this is a narrative that's been consistent with fans for as long as I've been watching football, which is 35 years. The fans almost invariably side with the ownership. They don't side with the referees making six figures or the players making seven figures. They side with the billionaire owners 99 out of 100 times. And I always find that fascinating. The last caller talks about the risk that the owner takes. Okay, the owner made billions of dollars from his dot-com or his oil business. And basically, the NFL team is a toy for him. And they are making fistfuls, barrels of money. And yet the fan is always angry at the referee for holding out, or the player for holding out. It doesn't take into account how much money the owners are making off them.
We need to leave it there. Thank you very much, Jason Keidel from WFAN in New York City.